hell was sitting here in the last show. Anyway, welcome to Subject to Discussion, live from the Logic and Broadcasting Network, High Top, the LIB building in Uptown Las Vegas, Nevada, using the satellite hookup of LVRocks.com. We appreciate them letting us use their facilities again. And I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly, call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. And I thank Mr. Snerdly for being here again this evening with me. Right, Mr. Snerdly?
Snerdly.
Yes, it's Rush's sister, Mr. Snerdly. No?
Okay.
Anyway, actually, first I want to say that next week the show's moving times. They got some damn sports show coming on and pushing my show back an hour, I believe, from 7 until 9. So Papa Joe Pizza, or what's his name? Papa Joe? Papa John?
Papa Joe Chevalier.
Papa Joe Chevalier is going to be on here. He's an old-timer sports guy from Chicago, so, you know, it's all right. He can have an hour of my time, I guess, if he's nice. Yes, OB. But anyway, and it's live on LVRocks.com, podcast on LVRocks.com. Click on podcast on the left side. And it brings you over to where the show is podcasted from. And also the program is archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. Well, I guess they're moving back, too, next week. So, anyway, later tonight we'll have, in just about 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes, 27 minutes, actually, we'll have Lori Lipman Brown. She's from the Socialist Coalition for America. And she was on Bill O'Reilly just now, so hopefully she's still alive after an encounter with O'Reilly. So, and we'll look to hear from her about what happened on O'Reilly and about, more about her organization and everything else. And then in the second hour, we'll have Leah Cairns. She plays Racetrack on Battlestar Galactica, and she will be on. I spoke with her this morning, and I spoke with her last week just to make sure she's locked in to be on the program. So she is, and she's got the right number and the right time and the right time zone, so everything's a go for her. And then next week, we're going to have David Clohese. He's from an organization called SNAPT, which is the executive director of the SNAP Survivors, which is a survivors network of those abused by priests, will be on. And then our first political sports report with Justin Gardner of the Dunkelfant blog, so he'll be on. And I want to thank everybody for listening to last week's program with Muffet. It went over like a firecracker because it's the second most podcasted show in this program's history. The top, of course, the number one podcast program was the most recent Katie Sackhoff interview. And so it's, I'm making an interview with Ronald D. Moore. Wow. Somebody named JL has been trying to get me an interview with email interviews. What the hell? Well, it's not for me. It's for some other show. What the hell? I want my own interview with Ron Moore. I don't have any contact with him. I just know his email address. So anyway, I want to update a story before we get rolling. Last week we mentioned about that accident on the Strip. Some maniac drove off the Strip there over by the actually it was Bally's Hotel. I got the wrong information according to KNews. And he ran into 15 people. He said he saw the people on the sidewalk and looked like demons, and so he ran them over. And a third death from that accident. Metro Police said a third victim has died from the accident last Wednesday on the Las Vegas Strip. Richard Bradford died this morning at UMC Hospital. Bradford was from Renton, Washington. He was 60 years old. The accident happened 1 week ago near Flamingo by Bally's, between Bally's and Paris. Bally's and Paris are on the Strip next door to each other. Bally's and the Paris Hotel are both owned by the Harrah's Entertainment Corporation, which owns the Caesars Palace where I work. The accident happened 1 week ago. One man died the day of the accident. Another one died at Sunrise Hospital the following day after the man ran over 14 pedestrians. His name is Stephen Risa. Apparently the guy beat up his mother at her house in California and stole her car and drove to Las Vegas. And when he got into the Strip, he saw demons, supposedly, gunned the car onto the sidewalk and mowed over all these people. The police are still trying to determine if Risa was under the influence of any substance at the time of the crash. So now the Risa will be his charges are going to be upgraded to 3 counts of murder and 11 counts of attempted murder. So he's going to go away for a long time. Hopefully, unless they find him insane, which, you know, they found demons, saw demons, so that's probably where it's heading. And then what else we had? We had Hurricane Rita. Of course, Hurricane Rita slammed into Louisiana and Texas. So our thoughts are with them and a big mess. And somebody said today on what show I was listening to, I think it was Jerry Doyle's program, They thought gas was going to go up to $5 a gallon by Halloween. Wow. So talk about trick or treats. I guess we're getting the trick, not the treat. So hopefully it won't. And then we had the other stunning news. Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher got married. That rocked the world. And accordingly, Bruce Willis was in attendance at the wedding as well. So, and what else? Internet. There's somebody else batting around idea. Why doesn't the government sell off some of the land that they own to help pay down this hurricane recovery money? You know, because I saw they own six. The government owns 644 million acres of land. So, I mean, if they sell half of that, supposedly they can gain about $200 billion if they sell half the land that the government owns. 644 million acres. And actually, the government owns 85% of the land here in Nevada. So, and it's Nevada, not Nevada. Jerry Doyle, get it straight. I know you're on Bad Bomb 5, and I love that show, but call the damn state by its right name. It's Nevada, not Nevada.
Well, the federal government actually owns quite a bit of land, but most of it's all set aside for different parks, projects, everything.
You don't need
like
all
that.
I mean, who the hell goes on all these parks? Yeah, I saw this. Well, really? No. There's a story here that somebody found a waterfall which has been there for hundreds of years in California and then nobody ever found before. You know, some kind of forest or somewhere up in Northern California. I don't know. I don't have the story with me, but that's like a couple months ago. So, but
you ever been up in the Redwood area?
No. I'm a city man.
Oh,
I'm from Chicago.
It's completely compacted with redwoods everywhere.
My idea of roughing is going up the top of the Sears Tower. I'm sorry.
Okay.
our paper napkins are my idea of roughing it. But anyway, so, I mean, why not? Why not sell some of that land? Who's going to use all that 644 million acres? You know, sell some of it. And so pay down some of this is a hurricane mess. So anyway, and then we had the big thing about the overdue credit card bills hit a record high. Charge it. This is from the Associated Press from an hour ago. That familiar refrain is producing an unwanted response for more Americans. Your bill is overdue. Surging energy prices, low personal savings, and higher costs of borrowing have combined to produce a record level of overdue credit card bills. The American Bankers Association reported Wednesday that the percentage of credit card accounts 30 or more days past due climbed to an all-time high of 4.81% in the April to June period. It could grow in the months ahead, experts said. The previous high of 4 points, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's just the gas prices are stretching the budgets, and gas is over $3 a gallon, and people are charging everything. So, and then Americans are saving less money because they're having to dig into their savings account to pay their bills, or they don't have savings accounts. So I wish we'd get some kind of thing where the government will encourage people to save money. I mean, that's what I think we should be doing. I have a 401k, which I had when I left New York, which I rolled over into an IRA, an IRA. So that's rolled over. I mean, there's money, but I can't touch it until I'm 100 years old. So, I mean, I'm piss poor, so... But, I mean, that's, I think, what they should be doing. And then we had yesterday Louisiana Senators Mary Landrieu and Democrat and David Vitter, Republican, have proposed legislation to provide $250 billion in federal aid to help their state rebuild from Hurricane Katrina. The massive, I'd say so, 10-year plan and contained in a bill introduced September 22nd includes $180 billion in direct federal spending. What the hell are they spending it on? I saw they're putting on bridges, alligator farm, gold-plated cufflinks for all the senators. I don't know. The Landrieu-Vitter package would draw most of its funds from federal appropriations, obviously. The energy bill signed into law in August provides Louisiana with $135 million in oil and gas lease revenue annually for 4 years to be used for coastal restoration work. We better plot it into the levees and all that instead of building malls and fountains. You know, there'll also be a $40 billion that envision new Pelican Commission, which would be used for the Corporate of Engineers Hurricane and Flood Prevention. What do they call it, Pelican for? I wonder. Coastal Restoration and Navigation Projects. They're also going to $150 million to National Park Service for historic preservation grants. There's nothing left. All they got flooded out. The non-federal matching grants, shares will be 25%. Oh, let's just spend the money. Spend it. You know, screw our kids. Let them pay the bills. The measure would provide $30 million to the Park Service for preservation grants for National Historic Landmarks. There are none. All they got flooded away. You know, spend that money. You know, who cares? Who cares who's paying the bills? Spend it. And this also yesterday, illegal immigration has increased. I'm trying to get Mark Edwards on. I talked to his producer today about being on the program. Mark Edwards heads the Wake Up America program, or the Wake Up America Foundation. He does a show on KDWN out here, the 50,000-watt blowtorch, as they call it, and trying to get him on the program. So he's a Nevada Broadcasting Association Hall of Famer, so it'd be good to have him on, you know. So we'll see what happens there. Illegal immigrants are increasing despite tighter border security and now outnumber foreigners moving to the United States legally. Oh, the Pew. Yeah, I guess they do smell when they go over the border. Pew. The Pew Hispanic Center reports Tuesday that immigration in general has been picking up, tracking the reviving American economy and improving jobs picture. Immigration, both legal and illegal, topped 1.5 million in 99 and 2000. The number of people in the United States then plummeted, I think 9/11 is something to do it, to 1.1 million people by 2003. The number bounced back to 1.2 million in 2004. Among the report's findings, the number of legal permanent residents has declined to 455,000, while the number of illegal immigrants has increased from 549,000 to 562,000 people. And if they can number them, how come they can't boot them out of the country? I can't figure that out. You know? So, Mexico accounted for about a third of all U.S. immigrants, a percentage that was steady from 1992 to 2004. Well, blah, blah, blah. And more immigrants are shunning states with large immigrant communities such as New York and California and moving to states with smaller foreign-born populations such as North Kakalaki and Iowa. Iowa, oh, they'll stand out there for sure. So, I don't know. I mean, you got to do something. So you can't eat. O'Reilly had, what, how many millions of, 12 million, whatever it was, illegal immigrants are here. You can't go around and round them up and throw them out of the country. So I say, you know, let's fix the border. Let's put up a fence, bring the troops home from Europe. You don't need all those troops. And who are we protecting Germany from? Nobody's going to attack Germany. Bring them home, put them on the border, build that fence, build a fence or protect a border up in Canada and bolster the Coast Guard. And then make them, all those illegals that are here now, legalize them for crying out loud. You can't round them all up. You can't round up 12 million people.
Hey, Sean, if we shut down all those overseas bases, you'd find some problems.
Really?
We couldn't actually...
Just the European base.
Well, even just the European ones, because that's our main areas where we have airfields and things
hospitals?
Like that. Yes, we do have some major hospitals there. We'd start having problems.
Ramstead.
UN uses all those along with us.
Hmm.
So it's not just ours. It's a coalition of different people who use them.
Well, I mean, it's got to be some way. More tax money coming in. Oh, that's you talking about that. Okay, we're all out. We need to raise taxes to pay for all those bills. Oh, man, I don't know. I don't think that's... Yes, this is an interesting story. Good for this guy. Man takes citizenship oath and wins the lottery. A man who immigrated legally from Kenya to the United States found prosperity beyond his expectations, and the day he became a U.S. citizen. Shortly after, Moses Batak, whatever, of West Des Moines took the oath of citizenship on Friday, he discovered he had a $1.89 million winning ticket from Iowa's lottery hot lotto game. What a lucky guy here. I mean, how'd you like that? It's almost like you adopted a country and they netted you $1.8 million, the guy said. Only in America. That's true. He took the oath at the federal building in Des Moines and went shopping with his family, stopped at a gas station and checked his lottery ticket, and found out he won. Oh, I wish I had that kind of luck. You know, I can't get the win the lottery. I didn't get those hot teachers when I was in school. They have sex with me. You know, I get stuck with the nuns and everything else.
I think we should rescind his citizenship and take
right.
the money from him.
That's right. Plowed into the subject of discussion enhancement fund. Bones on rooftop, maybe from 9/11 victims. This is from Tuesday, from yesterday, from New York. Construction workers have found bone fragments and maybe the remains of those who died in the World Trade Center attacks on the roof of a neighboring skyscraper damaged on September 11th, a city official said. The fragments handed to the city of the offices of the city office of the city's chief medical examiner, who will establish whether they're human and try to identify them, were found during work to dismantle the Deutsche Bank building. Wow! In all these years, they found some bone fragments. Well, it's good to give these people some sense of closure, because so many people do not have bodies and everything. So. I hope that people get closure in this mess. And then we had the other shocking news of the week. One Tree Hill co-stars end marriage after 5 months. One Tree Hill co-stars Chad Michael Murray and Sophia Bush said Monday they are calling it quits after only 5 months of marriage. Bush 23, Murray 24, Mary and April during Seaside Ceremony in Santa Monica. The two met while filming the One Tree Hill. She plays feisty cheerleader Brooke Davis, and Murray plays Lucas Scott, the brooding, intellectually struggling to find peace. It's difficult, unfortunate, blah, blah, but these Hollywood marriages never last. Yeah, look at, Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. He's crazy throwing her over for Angelina Jolie. Give me a break. And consumer confidence sinks in September. This is from yesterday. Consumer confidence suffered its biggest drop in 15 years in September as Hurricane Katrina made Americans anxious about the rising costs of heating their homes and filling their gas tanks. Decline raised questions about consumer spending for the rest of this year, including the holiday shopping season. Oh, man, yeah, this shopping Christmas shopping season is going to be a disaster for these retailers. I hope they're ready. This is from also from Tuesday. Donald Trump, you're fired. How do you say it? You're fired. Donald Trump sent to become a father again. The Trump's empire keeps expanding. Well, his newest wife, Melania, whatever her name is pregnant. The baby is due in the spring. She's 35 years old. Oh, man, good for him. He can still do it. You know, he's like Larry King. You know, he's like 100 kids. She is Trump's third wife. He has kids from Ivana. And then his second wife, Marla Maples. What happened to her? We haven't heard from her in ages. I'm surprised she doesn't have a skyscraper going up here in Las Vegas. Now, because in Vegas we have the Donald Trump's building a building here on the grounds of the Frontier Hotel. And then Ivana is building a skyscraper with condos and everything across from the Sahara Hotel on the property that used to be called the Holy Cow Casino. So, and this is also from Tuesday. Hostage gave meth to Atlanta fugitive. The woman says she gained the trust of that's a courthouse gunman, Brian Nichols, went into her place and held her hostage. But anyway, she, in her book, she had methamphetamine, and he asked her for marijuana and all this. All she had was meth, so she gave him meth to calm him down. But she never revealed that to the authorities until she wrote her book, and the authorities are saying they're not going to charge her with anything. So, she also said the 7-hour hostage ordeal led her to stop using drugs. She has not touched drugs, supposedly, since the night before she was taken hostage. So, we'll see. I don't know. I should charge her anyway. I mean, there's a reason why I should get away with that. Here's one of my favorite. This ties into my guest from next week. So, but anyway, Cardinal cover-up found. Leaders of the Philadelphia Archdiocese, including two cardinals, concealed sexual abuse by Roman Catholic priests for 4 decades, a grand jury has found. Man, this is, gets worse and worse and worse. After 30, yeah. And it gets worse and worse and worse. A grand jury has found, but no criminal charges can be brought against the church or its clergy because of limits of statute of limitations. Oh, man, this is ridiculous. I thought you had to bring the charges before the statute of limitations could die out. The grand jury convened more than 3 years ago, issued a scathing report yesterday that documented assaults by more than 60 priests. It also charges a cover-up by Cardinal John Kroll, bastard, Archbishop of Philadelphia from 61 to 88, who died in 96. I hope he's in hell burning, you know what I mean? And his successor Cardinal Anthony Bevacqua, who retired in 2003. To protect themselves from negative publicity or keeping abusive priests active, the cardinals and their aides hid the priest's crime from parishioners, police, and the general public. Oh man, the grand jury considered charges against the archdiocese, but said the organization can't be prosecuted because it is an unincorporated association rather than a corporation. Make up their minds. You know, it's a state, it's a company. Archdiocese leaders have endangered and harmed children by keeping known abusers in the ministry and transferring discovered abusers to assignments where parents and potential victims were unaware of the priest's sexual behavior. 63 of these priests. 63. It's ridiculous. I mean, this just makes you sick. Yeah, and then of course the Archdiocese of Philadelphia had to fire back. You know what I mean? They couldn't say yes, we did wrong. We're sorry. Blah blah blah. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia is consistent. This is from an editorial in the Philadelphia Daily News. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia is consistent, sickeningly so. It still refuses to own up to its role in subjecting children to the sick whims of perverted priests. This week, the Archdiocese demeaned the pedophile's victims and wasted its moral authority by denying its complicity in its sex scandal. Stung by a blistering grand jury report accused the top church leaders of an immoral campaign, according to the Catholic Archdiocese of Philadelphia, the report was motivated by anti-Catholic bias. Yeah, I mean, this is horrible. It's nuts. I mean, what if it was reversed? What if say it was the teens that were raping and screwing these priests? Oh, all hell! It'd be all over the damn news. We'd be frying those kids at the stake. Oh no, you know, how dare they rape those priests? You know, they're ambassadors of God. You know, but if the priests are screwing all these boys. Oh no, well, this is under the rug. We can't charge anybody with anything. You know, and Ratzinger gets away with urging all the archdiocese to conceal all that. I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't wait to get this guy on next week. This is more of the same. Denver Archdiocese faces more sex abuse lawsuits. Latest lawsuit also names Reverend Leonard Abercrombie, a Strasbourg man who said he was in grade school when a former Roman Catholic priest allegedly gave him alcohol and then sexually assaulted him. Was among three more men filing sex abuse lawsuits Tuesday against the Archdiocese of Denver. The lawsuit was believed to be the first naming Abercrombie. Said the plaintiff's attorney, blah blah. Archdiocese was aware of abuse allegations, but concealed that information. Well, I don't understand it. The government, the Justice Department's got to go in there and shut these damn archdiocese down. I mean, for Christ's sake, you got to get the handle on this thing. It keeps going on. These kids are harmed for life. The three lawsuits each week each seek at least $10 million in compensatory damages. How do you put numbers on something so terrible that has affected your life, the guy said. Let me see. The other two men have filed claims in Pueblo accusing former Catholic high school's high school teacher, William Mueller, of drugging them with ether and then sexually assaulting them. Oh, my God. This is horrible. Oh, an archdiocese chancellor. Oh, we are not going to pursue this matter in the public media. Where was this? What was the story here about what? Here we go. This guy, Coburn, the victim, alleges Abercrombie, a friend of the family, sexually assaulted him on a camping trip when Coburn was 10 or 11 years old. Coburn alleged he was passed out on alcohol that Abercrombie gave him and awoke to find the former priest grinding against him. That's lovely. Lovely childhood memory to have for these damn priests, you know. Burn them all, I'd say. You know, put them all in jail. You know, for crying out loud. Stick them in the damn prison and have a prisoner named Rufus to show them how it is, you know. That's what I do. I don't know. I do have a personal story about that, so if the mood strikes me next week, I might just talk about it, but we'll see. Getty had plans, had signs it was acquiring possible looted art, documents show. Attorneys for the J. Paul Getty Museum in L.A. Have determined that half the masterpieces in its antiquities collection were purchased from dealers now under investigation for allegedly selling artifacts looted from the ruins in Italy. That's lovely. The Italians have Polaroid photographs seized from a dealer's warehouse in Switzerland that show Getty artifacts in unrestored state, some encrusted in dirt. So they say it's a, you know, the Getty Museum was so bent on having a first-class art collection that they bought art that was stolen or purchased under suspicious circumstances. So, you know, it was a nice museum. So, see what happens after that. And Oakland pastor among those arrested during prostitution sting. Well, at least this one's with women, you know what I'm saying? A local pastor was among 68 people arrested in a prostitution sting by Oakland police this week. I think get him on the program. He's the mayor of Oakland. What the hell is this? Jerry Brown. It'd be nice to talk to him, see what he's got to say. Reverend Craig Ward, 40, of the Brookings African Methodist Episcopal Church, flagged over a female undercover officer in his church-issued BMW. Oh, man. Where's my LV Rocks-issued Mercedes? You know what I'm saying? Thursday.
It's in the mail.
Yeah, in the mail, yeah. Thursday, and tried negotiating a $20 oral sex act. It was blatant. He wasn't there to save anybody. This is Ward's third arrest for soliciting a prostitute, blah. A total of 34 prostitutes, two pimps, and 32 Johns were arrested during Oakland sting on Thursday. Three prostitutes were as young as 14 years old, the police said. Man. Where are these parents? Where are the families, you know? Sad. Oakland. South African AIDS expert urges circumcision. South African AIDS expert Saturday advocated male circumcision as the best available vaccine against the AIDS virus in his country. I don't know what the hell circumcision's got to do with AIDS, but when an estimated 6 million people are infected, more than 600 people die every day. We dream of a vaccine which has this efficiency, said the clinical director of the Reproductive Health and HIV Research at the University of Witwatersrand, I guess it is. The results are phenomenal. Well, good for them. If it works, why not? The association between circumcision and a reduced risk of HIV was noted as early 1987. Well, hopefully that works. Africa's got the highest rate of AIDS and people dying from AIDS in any country in the world, any continent in the world. This is from Saturday. Executive order sought from Chicago mayor. And this is from WBBM, Channel 2 in Chicago, formerly of Bill Curtis, used to anchor the news there. Bill Curtis in Chicago, how he used to say it. He's another one who can get the damn say Chicago, not Chicago. Yeah, Coco, Chicago. Yeah, not Chicago, it's Chicago. Yeah. I'm serious.
Like Nevada.
Nevada, yeah, Nevada, Nevada. But Jerry Doyle, I mean, you're an accomplished actor and everything. Get the state right, you know, Nevada. You know. So an executive order, a federal monitor reviewing the hire practices at City Hall wants an executive order from Mayor Richard Daley that protects city employees who cooperate with her investigation. The executive order is necessary because it sends a message that people who have provided information may want to do that in the future aren't going to be retaliated against. Oh, the mayor of Chicago retaliating against people who are squealing at him? Oh, my God, I'm shocked they would even think of that. So, I mean, all this, I think, is drudged up by Jesse Jackson Jr., who wants to run for mayor against Mayor Daley in Chicago. He's hoping to throw enough mud against him, they'll muddy him up to give him a fair chance against Daley in the election. So we'll see about that. Man charged with fake TV show fundraising. Authorities in L.A. have arrested a man for allegedly bilking investors out of $5.5 million for fraudulently claiming to be producing a government-backed television show about the Department of Homeland Security. Yay! What can I get? How can I can't bilk somebody out of some money to move the show to a radio station or something? I could bilk somebody about $1 million if I could. Yeah,
I think we should. I get half.
Somebody. Yeah, where's the who can I bilk here? Kona Girls, can I bilk you? Or who else in the damn chat room? Sci-Fi, can I bilk you out of $1 million? Man charged with fake. Oh, I already read that. I'm reading the same stuff over and over. Let me go back to my priest story again. You know. I guess we should take a break to bring in the guest on. Anyway, I'm going to take a little musical interlude break, and we'll bring on Lori Lipman Brown from the Secular Coalition for America. She'll be with us in just a few minutes. Stand by.
Looking to the dotted line.
And we are back on Subject to Discussion Live on LVRocks.com. And I said next week we're moving. The show's moving back an hour. It'll be on from 7 p.m. Pacific till 9 p.m. Pacific. And next week's guest will be David Clohese of the SNAP organization about survivors of priest sexual abuse by priests. So, and joining us right now is Lori Lipman Brown from the Secular Coalition for America. Lori, are you there?
I am. It's a little hard to hear you.
Oh, a little hard to hear me. All right. How about now? I'll talk a little louder.
That's better. That's
there you
great.
Go. There you go. And welcome to the program.
Thanks.
And you're an old Vegas person because I met you. Actually, I met her, 2 years ago. I met you at the conference at the Stardust Hotel.
That's right.
Yeah, with your father. Your father's a great man.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And you're quite involved, too. You used to be a state senator here in Nevada.
Yes. From 92 to 94.
Yeah, and then you went off to, now to tell everybody out there a little bit about the Secular Coalition of America, America.
Secular Coalition for America, and by the way, our website is secular.org if anybody wants to, you know, really look into it, is the first lobbying, well, I'm the first lobbyist they hired, and the first staff member who's now the first lobbyist specifically representing atheists, humanists, other non-theistic folks in Congress. But the coalition was formed about 4 years ago, in part in response to just how far religion was getting involved in government, especially following the events of 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were just on O'Reilly's program. How'd that go?
That went much better than I expected. Everyone told me he wouldn't let me get a word in edgewise, mm-hmm. and he let me talk about even something we were lobbying on right now about religious discrimination and Head Start hiring that was passed in the House by a narrow margin, and we're trying to stop it in the Senate.
Now, he was all right. I said it when we were talking off the air that I'd sent you an email, you know, how he kind of leers at people, but you're via satellite, so actually it probably was to your advantage, huh?
Yeah. In fact, another person had said, oh, I wouldn't go on unless I could be face-to-face with him. But it was fine. I was just looking at a blank camera.
Yeah. Well, Rosie O'Donnell was on, and she said that she had diarrhea for a week before she went on O'Reilly's program. How'd you do?
Actually, I did fine. Yeah. It was really just very much easier than I thought it would be, because I really was nervous also, thinking, okay, he's going to attack me, and I have to come back, and... But it was fine.
Yeah, which is funny, though, you know, because I was watching Fox most of the day, and they didn't run any promos for you being on the program, which I thought that was kind of odd.
Aw.
Yeah, I don't understand that. They ran, you know, I missed the second commercial. You know, he runs it usually during the Studio B about what's coming up in O'Reilly, and he didn't mention. He mentioned, you know, about Katrina and about delay, getting indicted, but anything about, you know, I don't know, so, you know,
yeah,
still.
Yeah, well, delay's the big story out here now.
Yeah. Is that the big story out there in D.C.?
Yeah.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Now, my coalition doesn't need to get involved in that because it doesn't have to do with church-state stuff. But yeah.
And then, tell everybody, you know, your organization, church separation of church and state, correct?
Right. So we're watching, for example, like the bill I was just talking about, where, you know, there's a lot of federal tax money that's been going to religious organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular bill is especially offensive because it's federally funded Head Start programs, which is a secular thing, you know, your public education kind of stuff. And this amendment they put on it in the House, by a narrow margin, but it did pass, actually says that a religious organization can get this money to run this completely federally funded federal program, and they can say to a Head Start teacher, you're fired because you're not in our church.
Huh. It's amazing.
And hire some other teacher who may not be as qualified just because they're the right religion. I mean, I've never seen anything this extreme before.
No, I mean, what about, you know, well, Bush, he's suggesting that we take money for Katrina and give it to faith-based organizations. What do you think about that?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not a conspiracy kind of person, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the screw-ups at the federal bureaucratic levels weren't just an excuse to show, oh, well, you know, churches can do it better, so let's not use federal dollars for government things. Let's just give it all to churches and let them do it and, you know, free up their other monies for being able to do more things for their church, you know, kind of subsidizing their church activities that part of which would have just been charity work they would have been doing anyway.
Yeah, well, because part of that, I know the state government, they asked some of the churches to help you know, take in some of these evacuees. So that I can kind of see, because they asked them to help.
Yeah, that sounds more like renting space from a church because they were desperate for space.
Yes.
You know? But then I also heard that they were going to get paid for labor and all that, and I know that the reports were all saying, well, all these good people who happen to belong to these churches were volunteering their time and, you know, doing these charitable things. Well, it's not volunteer work or charitable if you then give a bill
for
what you just did. I mean, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, and then how's the reception been to you in D.C.? You've been there, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, actually. I got an overwhelming amount of supportive emails and phone calls and just really some of them very touching from people saying, oh, you know, I've spent 20 years not telling anyone that I'm an atheist, and it's so good to see there's someone representing me finally, and just a lot of people feeling they're just happy that there's someone here representing them. And then also I'm working in coalition with, maybe it seems ironic, but I'm working in coalition with a lot of religious groups on, for example, this Head Start piece. So that's nice, too, that everybody's embracing the fact that, okay, there's a big stigma on atheism, and you know, the polls show that elected officials won't get elected if they declare that they don't believe in a God, no matter how qualified they are. I mean, so there's all this discrimination and prejudice out there against atheists. But the religious community that works for separation of church and state, that aspect of the religious community, has embraced me and said, yes, please, you know, join us, and you know, we'd love your perspective and your assistance on our work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, I think we've got to get God out of the way. Like the whole Pledge of Allegiance thing, I think we're wasting time. Get the, you know, under God out of there. You know?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I thought by now, because of all the information that was put out there when Newdow brought his case, I thought everybody realized that was added to the pledge in 1954, but when I was on O'Reilly, he said something about, well, under God and the pledge is traditional, and I said, no, it isn't. It was added during the McCarthy witch hunts as part of a political ploy to make everyone think of atheism as communism and all of that kind of stuff, and pretend that atheists couldn't be good patriotic citizens and all of that.
Yeah.
It just is a political tool.
Yeah, what was O'Reilly's reaction to that?
He was surprised I called McCarthyism a witch hunt. I guess he was former. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing he seemed shocked that I actually thought McCarthyism was a bad thing.
Really? Yeah, it was a bad thing. It's all the communist hunt back in the when, you know, Cliff Robertson and all them were blackballed from Hollywood and everything.
Yeah, it was a hard. I mean, you know, there's some historical things that you just figure, okay, at the time they had some supporters, but now in retrospect everybody knows this was a horrible part of our history. But I guess not everybody knows that.
It's amazing, because usually O'Reilly is very well informed and
he might have known when it was put in. Maybe he thought being there for 50 years made it traditional. But historically, I would have loved to have more time, but of course on O'Reilly I've got 5 minutes. On your show I have a little longer. So that's nice. But I would have loved to have gone into how even religious people, I would hope, would be outraged at how what they should consider sacred has been taken and just used as a political tool. I mean, there's nothing sacred about making politics out of the Pledge of Allegiance by inserting under God in between one nation and indivisible.
Well, yeah, actually, we have somebody in the chat room saying that this is how religion was prospered in America, no state church.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. And then somebody else is saying when church and state mix, it usually means war of some sort.
Or at least revolt. I mean, people don't want to be supporting someone else's church or religion.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, it seems like every time any kind of church gets involved with any of the government, you always have wars, you always have really bad things happen. It doesn't seem like any... Could you name any theocratic or theocracy nations that have ever really lasted for very long?
I don't really know of any well-working theocracies out there, but I know for certain that our founding fathers, I know they were all guys, but anyway, our founders were very dead set against having religion in government. I mean, Madison won that fight when it came to the Constitution and kept God out of the Constitution. There were people who disagreed with him, like Patrick Henry, but they didn't win that fight, and people seem to forget that now. And when Jefferson worked on the Bill of Rights, they won that fight. They got that First Amendment in there. They erected that wall of separation. And there are a lot of people in this country trying to rewrite history now.
Yeah, well, cause it seems like that wall has been kind of cracked with, you know, first Reagan and now and then the two Bushes.
Between faith-based initiatives and vouchers and even Supreme Court decisions saying, oh, it's fine to have prayer in legislative bodies. I mean, what's the secular purpose of that?
Yeah, that boggles the mind. I don't know why. Then, well, the edict that they passed down that religious symbols are okay if they've been there for a certain amount of years, but any new ones cannot be allowed?
Well, but are you talking about the Ten Commandments cases that just came down?
Correct.
And I think it also had a lot to do with the context, not just how long it had been there.
Yes.
So, kind of a historical overview, yes, but a religious display, no.
Yeah, I think they said if it's overtly religious, it can't go up. If it's, you know, the Supreme Court. They have the Ten Commandments up there, and all the, you know, all the religious figures up on the walls. I guess it'd be too expensive to take all that down. And
well, it's not because of the expense. Mm-hmm. I think in the Supreme Court, where I think they have Moses holding the commandments, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just numbers, like Roman numerals. They don't actually have the words.
Yeah.
And then they have other people, I guess the Code of Hammurabi. I'm not sure what they are, but like lots of different historical lawgivers. And so that's a whole different context.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, if they actually put the words of the Ten Commandments up there, there are a few that I disagree with. So.
Yeah. And then like another question from the chat room is, does God take sides in wars and sports games?
And sports games, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because they always say, one football team, we need God to help us. So what does that mean? If one team wins, everyone loses. I mean, you know, you said, you know, God doesn't like the other team.
Does God hate the other team they let the other team win? You know,
that becomes even more absurd when people, you have two or three people who survive a plane crash or a terrible hurricane like Katrina. Saying, oh, it's because I had faith in God. Well, the majority of people in this country have faith in God, and most of the people on that plane died.
Yeah, I mean, what does that say? I mean, God liked you but didn't like the other people that died?
Yeah.
You know?
Of course, I have no problem with people who believe that, and that's fine, as long as they don't impose it on my government.
Exactly. As I said, you could be religious, but don't throw it in my face every time I turn around, or, you know, the same thing with 9/11. When 9/11 happened, they wrapped religion around 9/11, and that was horrible.
And that was part of the reason that this coalition got formed. I mean, this whole, immediately after 9/11, we had pretty much the entire Congress on the steps of Congress singing God Bless America, which, like I said, I have no problem with people having different beliefs than I do, but I don't want to live in a theocracy.
Yeah.
I mean, I may be in a minority group, but that's what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is there for, to protect people of differing beliefs.
You
know, a wonderfully pluralistic society, and boy, there are theocrats out there who've made that word into a bad word.
Yeah. I mean, like Michael Newdow, he was on, I think, with Hannity and Hannity Combs, and boy, Hannity just wouldn't let him up, over the pledge.
He went crazy on him.
Yeah. What's wrong with the differing of opinions in this country? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just beat the daylights out, verbally, and he didn't get three words in, I mean, freedom of speech. What happened to that? That's out the window, I guess. If you don't agree with people who are in power or their opinions, I guess you're anti God believer or anything, unpatriotic and all that.
Yeah, last night on Tucker Carlson, he asked me why do you guys hate Christians? I'm like, we don't hate Christians. Heck, we work with Christians on separation of church and state issues.
Yeah,
it's just strange what they come up with, but it's a shame that Hannity didn't let Michael Newdow speak, because he's really quite brilliant, and tackling some really tough issues.
Yeah, he spoke at the conference 2 years ago, and he's a wonderful speaker. You know, because at first I wasn't sure where he fit on the pledge business. I was like, well, I didn't realize what's the big deal about it. And after I heard him, I'm like, it is a big deal. You know?
Oh yeah, I mean, the courts has consistently held that a public school can't lead students in a religious exercise each morning. It doesn't matter if they have the right not to participate in this religious activity. This is the imprimatur of the actual governmental entity, the public school, leading this religious exercise. And for those people who don't think saying under God has anything to do with religion, then what is it about?
Yeah. Now, what hopes do you have for your organization? I mean, you just got there. I read you're looking for an assistant. You know, I'm available to come out there. You know?
Well, you wouldn't like the pay. I was actually thrilled to get a legislative assistant who pretty much volunteered to do it for just a really small stipend.
Wow.
Otherwise, it would have been just me handling the entire office, all the media and all the lobbying, and all the speaking engagements and whatever else comes up. Yeah. But so really what I'm hoping is twofold. I hope that we change attitudes, that we change the conversation and the tone of the conversation, that people won't feel 5 years from now as perfectly acceptable about just ignoring the atheists in our nation, just pretending we don't exist, just saying, well, all of us believe in a God, you know, that won't necessarily happen 5 years down the road.
Yeah. Is that where you're looking? What's your benchmark for progress with the organization? Like 5 years, if you're at a certain point, you'll think, well, I'm doing a damn good job, or what?
Well, I just picked a general notion of how far out I might look. We just put together our internal plan, and our short-term goals obviously are the kind of things we're doing right now, lobbying on some of these, where the money's going happens to be what we're lobbying now because of all the money bills that are coming up because everything else was kind of set aside after Katrina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But eventually, in our plan, we're looking at, you know, where would we like to be in 3 years and 5 years. So we're so new, we haven't even actually had our big yearly board meeting. That'll be in 2 weeks.
Yeah. And you said Washington, pretty much a lot of people have welcomed you there and everything. I mean, have you run into any congressmen or senators that kind of ran away?
No. Actually, the senators I did meet at an event last week, they were really pleasant. And even the person who was introducing me around said, oh, this person's really bad on our issues, was very, very nice to me. And, you know, I said to him, you know, I hope because you're, you know, highly religious that maybe you'll see why even religious people should be really outraged at the politicizing of religion and trying to divert federal funds to religious organizations. So, you know, I think it'll be fine. I've worked with people who disliked me. In fact, when I was in the state legislature, a lobbyist came up to me at the end of the session who disagreed with me on 99.9% of all of the issues and thanked me for always working with her in a polite, respectful way. And so maybe, you know, not that I believe in karma, but maybe that's coming back now, and elected officials are treating me with respect even if they don't agree with me.
It's like I said, if we disagree, we can disagree without being disagreeable. I mean, you know, it's an open society. We can all have different views. Like me, you know, I don't believe there's a God. I believe there was a Jesus Christ, but I don't believe there was a God. I'm kind of like in the middle. I'm up in the air. I mean, what's wrong with that? I tell people that at work to look at me like I'm the devil himself. You know what I'm saying?
Well, my sister always accuses me of being an atheist because I think there might have been something out there because I don't know, and so I can't discount something I don't know. If there's an unknown, I can't just flat out say, oh, everyone's wrong, or I don't know.
Within our member groups, we have some folks who identify as agnostic, who kind of feel that way.
Absolutely.
And I look at it as I imagine there are lots of things we don't know yet, and I don't really find it useful to worry about it. You know, live the best life I can now.
Yeah. Actually, we have a comment from the chairman. It says, LaRoque, he likes the idea of that God favors winners. God favored the Babylonians and the Persians, et cetera, over the Jews. That's why they invaded Israel. I don't know about that. I think they just overwhelmed them, don't you think? I don't know.
Is there a question in
no,
there?
No, that was just a statement. I'm sorry.
Oh. Yeah, well, like I said, some people have all kinds of beliefs, but keeping in mind, not that I debate theology, like I said, I don't think it's really important if someone believes differently than I do, just that they don't impose their religion on me in my government. But those kinds of arguments, I think, don't get very far because we start with a different premise.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If you start with, if one person's starting with the premise that that there's a God and the other one that there isn't, then...
Two different premises right
you're
there.
You're arguing from two different beliefs.
Yeah. Now, another question for chat room. I already asked that. What's your benchmark for success in D.C.? What else? And looking ahead, can secularists play a bigger role in the elections of 06 and 08?
Oh, I don't know if that'll happen that quickly. Hmm. When you think about it, the most recent poll showed that the majority of Americans won't vote for anyone who is an atheist or expresses that they are. Even if they're the best candidate. So I'm guessing, and plus we know that the religious right turns out in huge percentages to vote, so, or at least that's the perception amongst elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that elected officials, if they want to keep their seats, are not going to be jumping up and down going, I support the Secular Coalition for America's viewpoint. Or I support atheists, or I am an atheist, and they're not going to do that if they want to keep their seat in the near future.
Hmm.
Hopefully, years from now, that won't be an issue at all. And by the way, that problem that I just mentioned is the reason why, not you guys, but I have had interviewers try to pressure me to tell them which Congress people were most amenable to me. And I'm like, I'm not going to name those names because that's bad for people politically.
Yeah, and if you do name names, it's not going to get you nowhere with the organization. It just started, you know.
Yeah, and I see a huge analogy with out gay politicians who you wouldn't hear anyone, you know, talk about being gay and maybe not even supporting gay equality 20 years or 30 years ago, and now you do. And so I'm hoping it'll kind of progress similarly.
Yeah, it's like, well, the only openly gay congressman is Barney Frank from wherever the hell he's from, I think Massachusetts or
yeah,
something like that.
And as I recall, he hadn't chosen to come out. It was sort of...
Brought out.
Yeah, brought up.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to my question is since, you know, a lot of people of really, really hardcore faith really dislike gay and lesbians, do they dislike them more than they do the atheists or the agnostics? Is there like a more of a stigma on that than there is gayness? Or
there are a couple of factors here. One young lesbian woman was telling a group of us that her parents were more upset when she came out to them as an atheist than when they found out she was a lesbian.
Really?
They said, we can handle you being a lesbian, but how can you be an atheist? They were just horrified at that. I think, and in part, and this is kind of another thing that throws us off a bit, a lot of the gains that the LGBT community, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, have made came in the context of presenting themselves as very mainstream religious-type people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were more acceptable if at least they had religion.
Hmm.
It's still, I don't know. I mean, it depends on who is involved. I'm sure there are still people who despise LGBT folks more, but I don't know. I find a lot of visceral rage at anyone who would dare not believe in a God.
Hmm. Unbelievable. Well, a lot of reason why these politicians are, being nice to the gays and lesbians is because they got a lot of money to donate to campaigns.
That's right.
Yeah.
Groups like the Victory Fund have really, they just do out gay and lesbians, but other groups have also raised a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really hard to pull together the atheist and humanist and agnostic communities because we don't tend to gather together on Sundays.
Yeah,
it's but we're getting there. I mean, they raised enough to hire a staff, so a staff of one and a half of us anyway.
Yeah, and then, well, we're thinking of all these, one of my big pet peeves on the show is the priest that sexually abuses all these kids. I mean, we're thinking about that. I mean, I don't know why we're not locking up these priests. I mean, it boggles the mind, you know?
I think we are locking up some of them. That needs to be, I mean, anyone who is proved to have molested a child, I think, should get the worst punishment possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's a double standard. I think it's the duty of our secular government, when they prosecute this crime, to prosecute it across the board. I mean, just because someone is a member of the clergy doesn't exempt them from these laws. It
exactly.
Shouldn't exempt them from these laws. And I think more of the problem has been the church's cover-up at times in that regard. And there's, you know, there's some of the dioceses are very good about not covering it up or making sure, and they're good about making sure that these people get justice done, but it fluctuates. I mean, within that particular denomination.
My thing is, I keep saying, if it was an atheist or something like that was, you know, raping these kids, it'd be all over news. It'd be stringing them up, in the town square. You know what I'm saying?
There's a double standard, and again, I can analogize it to the double standard with gay people. That when a gay person, but if a pedophile molests someone of the same gender, a child of the same gender, there's like a statement that, gay people go after children, right?
Yeah.
But over 90% of child molesters are heterosexual men. No one says, heterosexual men are all child molesters, right?
Yeah.
Well, I see it as something very similar. Anytime someone who is not religious is shown to be some horrible murderer or whatever the crime is, it's because they didn't have faith in a religion.
Mm-hmm.
But look at how many people who are behind bars for rape and murder and child molestation do have a faith in a religion, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a real double standard.
Yeah. Now, Lori, we're almost out of time here. Do you want to give a pitch for the website for your organization and who to contact if those want to give a donation?
Oh, yes. The Secular Coalition for America's website, which will also show up if you Google the name, is secular.org.
Very good.
Or if you put in any search engine, Secular Coalition for America. So secular.org will tell you how to donate, and it will also give you legislative alerts. Because we are trying to get people to call their senators on this Head Start problem.
Absolutely. Well, Lori, I'm going to put you on hold for a minute. We want to talk to you off air for a minute or so, okay?
Sure,
okay.
Thanks.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you. Can you put it on hold? There you go. And that was Lori Lipman Brown, of the Executive Director of the Secular Coalition for America. And we're going to talk to her for a minute and see if she can do a little bumper for the program. And come up in the second hour, we'll do our Galactica review of the mid-season cliffhanger. And then a little bit further into the second hour will be Leah Cairns. She plays Racetrack on the program. So once again, this is subject to discussion, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Thank you. Thank you.
did get a fair trial. What kind of a trial could they have possibly had?
I assure you I heard them out. I weighed their statements against those of the guards, and I took into consideration their service records and commendations. It was a difficult decision, Commander, but I dare say it was a fair one.
They have the right to have their case heard by a jury.
I am a flag officer on detached service during a time of war. Regulations give me broad authority in this matter.
Launch the fighters. You can quote me whatever regulation you'd like. I'm not going to let you execute my men.
I highly suggest you reconsider that statement, Commander.
Admiral, Galactic is launching fighters on a raptor.
Commander? Why are you launching Vipers?
Please arrange for Chief Tyrrell and Lieutenant Agathon to be handed over to my Marines as soon as they arrive.
I don't take orders from you.
Call it whatever you like. I'm getting my men.
You are making such a mistake.
I'm getting my men.
Presenting His Eminence, our Imperious Leader. By your command. See that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I want to thank Blade Runner for those sound bites from the mid-season finale of Battlestar Galactica. And I want to thank Edward James Olmos and Michelle Forbes for being on the program. And a special brief appearance, probably as brief appearance I'm ever going to get from them two. Oh, you're starting the music again?
Yeah, I always have to have it in the background.
There you go. And I want to review, first of all, you know, the magazine just came out, so hopefully next week we can talk about the magazine. Vegas is short on the, slow on the uptake with these magazines, but I got the Battlestar Galactica magazine, $6.99 for that damn thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that next week, and we'll review what happened on the last episode, and Leah Cairns will be in with us in just a few minutes, talk about her role in the series and everything else, so... what'd you think of the last episode?
That was a great last episode.
Yes, the drama.
That was one of those better cliffhanger episodes.
Yes, yes.
Big cliffhanger because, I mean, the two commanders or the two, you know, leaders of the two different battle stars just completely going after each other. And I thought that was a great way that they did it. I thought that I really didn't have a thought on how they were going to lead up to where there was going to be the fight between the two. And I think that that was probably one of the best ways they could have ever done it.
Yeah. I was led to believe or somehow that I thought the two battle stars were going to be aimed at one another. I thought that, well, that'd be kind of cool way to end the season too.
Wasn't that one of the spoilers that they were going to be aimed
supposedly
at each other?
At the end of the end of the show? Supposedly the two ships are going to be pointed at one another. So I don't know. I thought that'd be kind of cool too. But
both alert fighter groups both came out. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how there's so many alert fighters still. They keep losing them, but they.
And the sci-fi board, they also mentioned that they can't keep track of how many ships they have because the ship count all of a sudden skyrocketed.
It's like all of a sudden
38
they found
ships. And they had 12 at the end of last season. Where all these 26 ships come from?
They found a whole bunch of Raptors in storage in Locker B.
I don't know. And then. A lot of people say they opened up the. If you want to call in and talk about the season ender, just a few minutes. Anybody wants to call in? It's 1-866-587-6257, or if you want to save us a dime, it's 702-383-8120, and you could give us your 2 cents about the Galactica midseason finale. A lot of people say that the music they played at the beginning of the episode was a nod towards Miami Vice. Because the music was kind of Miami Vice-ish, because almost was on in Miami Vice. I'm like, well, I don't know what the hell.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I don't think so either. And actually, with the cliffhanger, Galactica is actually an episode ahead of the original series now, and episode's done, apparently.
Oh, cool.
Up to 20. Is it 24? Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but that's why I did my count, and for my count, Friday's episode, it now put the new series ahead of the original series by one episode. So we'll see. And the ratings, supposedly, they did very well. Galactica did, I think, a 2.1 million viewers or something like that. So, and Koenig is saying that the mid-season finale of Galactica did a 2.0. I thought it would have been a little higher. Atlantis got a 1.7, and season 3 is still on for the...
The Atlantis one was pretty good.
I saw the end of that.
The Stargate one was excellent.
Really, really.
I think that was probably Sci-Fi Channel's best season ending of any of their shows, this one besides Battlestar, that was number one. But I mean, all the rest of all the sci-fi shows I've ever seen, that was probably like the second best one.
And then some people are saying that they think that the show's starting to run out of gas, Galactica. I don't know. Hell, it's only the second season. How can it run out of gas? Some of the continuity issues I can see, yes. You know, they're kind of, you know, the continuity is a little messed up with the, you know, Vipers and all that. But, I mean, it's a good show, so I'm not going to nitpick over how many Vipers they have. You know what I mean?
Have they ever actually said how many Vipers they have?
I think they did in the first season. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. They said if you want to call in, you can. This is your chance to put your two cents in about the mid-season finale. But I think it was said somewhere they only had so many ships left. And then what's his name was building the ship?
The
Blackbird.
Blackbird's out.
Tyrell. And it must be running out of ships as he's starting to build them. I don't know. And I thought that whole thing with, they found the other Battlestar. And Admiral Cain took over the fleet. And Adama, he still almost was going nuts. And Adama didn't like it. He kind of went along with it because he's a company man, so to speak. So I don't know, and we don't know how it's going to end. I mean, we don't know.
Well, she really overstepped her bounds in any kind of military group. You never, ever, ever completely override and destroy someone else's authority that's an officer.
Yeah.
If you do that, that's like career suicide.
Yeah, and normally. I didn't think, I'm like, oh, Michelle, Rowe from Star Trek, how the hell is she going to do on Galactica? But she did an outstanding job.
She did a good job.
And now we know, from our spoilers from a few weeks ago, that, J-Max says 12 Vipers are flying, 23 are down for repairs. So who knows? And I think she's assigned for the next episode, but after that, she's supposedly going to get killed off. So we don't know. We don't know if they're going to get killed off. Maybe they'll put under military arrest or something like that for starting a war or something like that. They can put her under arrest. I don't know. And then, like you said, Koenig has said that the Galactica or the Pegasus is going to stick around, the ship itself. And so I don't know. There we go. Koenig is saying the abused Cylon on Pegasus was Gina. That's the new six, I guess. G and name only, I guess. What is that? G. Oh. Ah. Oh, and A. Name only. Oh, so he's kind of taking a shot at the people saying the new show is Galactica name only. Name only. So he's using G-I-N-A. Gina. Ah, okay. And the Blackbird will be used against the Cylon base stars in episode 211. And a new ship remains a what? Whatever the new ship is. Huh. Which new ship? I don't know. The new, whatever the Cylons are protecting. And then people are saying in the chat room, I think it's the where the Cylon God is at. You know, the base ship. So I wonder
if Cylon God?
Yeah, whoever the Cylon God is. I wonder if it would be Muffet or not. I want to thank everybody. Last week's show went over like a rocket. Again, Muffet made...
What was that, Muffet? Is it the Cylon God?
Is the Cylon God. Muffet, we had enough of you last week. PR hog,
yeah.
Prima donna. You know, go back to your Alpo that Lauren Green left you in as well. I thought the drama of all that, and she went through her, gave everybody kind of a quick update what happened on the show when she went through Adama's records, his logs and all that.
Yeah.
We're not even going to mention your XO. Apollo and now Starbuck was not prevalent, really that prominent in the episode at all.
No.
She kind of went away when Apollo gave her the camera to go take pictures of the ship and the Blackbird. We never saw her again for the last of the episode. We don't know where she is.
She took off in the
Blackbird. Yeah, we don't know if she's there. I mean, with the two squadrons of coming at one another, where is the Blackbird? Blackbird's over taking a picture of the Cylons. Is the Blackbird armed? Do we know?
I don't know. I didn't see any gun ports on it or anything when they were making it.
Yeah, maybe they got photon torpedoes in there.
Phasers. Yeah, there you go.
And what else happened? Who else? Laura Rosen wasn't really that prominent in this episode either.
Well, she was.
A little bit.
The president was kind of off her kilter
episode.
Because, she didn't really want to relinquish any more control to the military, but then all of a sudden an admiral shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's going to have to try to reestablish government to military relationship, and I think she was a little bit kind of uneasy about that.
Yeah.
I think what she wanted was that the Battlestar captain that showed up,
mm-hmm.
Kane, Admiral Kane, show up and let him kind of run things as they were running them.
Mm-hmm.
But, then again, kind of like what a lot of people say, what does an education Education Secretary. What does she know about running a government to begin with?
Kane had the same reaction that Dominic did. Secretary of Education, he said she's come a long way. Well, that was kind of cool. He kind of admitted that she's actually grown in office. Who else? Ty wasn't really that prominent. He was drinking the moonshine there with the XO of the Pegasus. And I wonder if a lot of these officers are going to stick around. So I don't know if they're going to be on the Pegasus or what's going to happen.
Well, I think that story that he let out, I think they did this on purpose. So he looked dead serious, and then all of a sudden he realized what he was saying.
He was drunk.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And I think that probably actually happened, and all those people are going to end up...
revolt against Kane. So I wonder how this is going to resolve. Is the crew going to revolt against Kane? Somebody's going to shoot her? And so it can call off the ships or something. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's been given away that she's not going to make it through the 11th episode one way or another. She's going to get killed, or somehow she's not going to be in command because Koenig told us that Dama is going to get promoted to admiral. So in some, either she's going to be removed.
You know that the president is the one that appoints. She's the commander in chief. So she could actually, if she wanted to, and I think that may be how everything gets taken care of. Roslin steps in. Yeah, steps in and makes him like a 2-star admiral or whatever they go by for admirals. I was never in the Navy, so I don't know.
4-star, isn't it?
I have no idea what an admiral's star ranking is, but she could go in and demote her if she wants to. She could make her go clean the galleys. Normally you wouldn't do that, but she's really starting to do a bunch of stuff. So.
Yeah. And LaRocque says that he liked Starbucks scenes in the last episode. When they don't spend huge amounts of time on her, she works well. I don't know. She didn't really get her away with too much. Tyrell only had a few lines. It was an Adama episode. It felt like Adama, Kane, Rosalind episode.
Well, the whole big thing about that part of the episode with Tyrell. I can never say weird names like that, right?
Tyrell?
And then the other guy that was also in a relationship with Boomer.
Hilo. Yeah, Hilo. They beat the hell out of another in the ship, yeah. Now, and then what's his name from Pegasus, about ready to rape her.
Yeah.
And came out and killed the security chief of the Pegasus? Whoever that was.
They just said interrogator.
Interrogator. And
that's something that no matter what kind of war you're ever in, that is so against... everything anybody would ever stand for.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, raping a prisoner?
Prisoner abuse is never, ever. I mean, we're getting in trouble for taking pictures right now
in
real life, just taking pictures and humiliating people. Imagine if somebody did what this guy was going to do to one of the prisoners that we have in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be like the biggest scandal of all time.
Yeah.
The biggest one ever.
Yeah. And then somebody else was mentioning in the chat room that they think that Baltar could demand Kane back down because he's on the Pegasus and he's the vice president of the colonies.
Yes,
I don't think he's got he's busy with, what's her name, with Gina. I don't think he doesn't have any clue. That's right, he's on that ship too. They can't blow it up because he's on it. And,
they could blow it up.
Tyrell and Hilo are on the ship too, and then so I don't know. I don't think none of them know what's going on with the Pegasus and the Galactica. So I don't think. I like how they finally refer to it as the Galactica, because all during the show they can call it Galact. Now it's the Galactica. So maybe the ship's finally starting to become more of the central star of the program, like the Dukes of Hazzard. General Lee was the star of the show.
Well,
maybe the Galactica herself.
Yeah, but I mean, when they talk on the radio and everything, they always say Galactica Control. They always say those things because that's the way that you speak when you do those terms. So
I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? He would be shot and pissed on. What the hell? Baltar. Baltar would have been shot if he tried to demand Kane back down. I don't know. Her crew didn't like, they were really happy with her,
setting
the ships and everything.
I think there's probably like a few, like that interrogator and her, they're kind of in with each other. I think that those guards were kind of taken aback. I don't think they realized, I don't think they expected anything like that to happen. I don't think Tyrell and Hilo. I don't. They didn't mean to kill the guy.
No,
I mean,
trying
on.
To protect her from getting raped.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's just something that, you know, goes against every military regulation ever, even in real life. So.
And then what else? Heretic said that Baltar won't because he's gonna snap against humanity after this incident. Oh, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
He sees how humanity can be, how bad they can be. But also, Six should see how not all humans are bad because, you know, compared. You know, the way Gina is being handled to, you know, that a human, you know, is, you know, they're actually being treated very well. I mean, Sharon's Cylon's being treated very well. She's got a bed and everything. She eats well. So maybe they, you know, let up on the humans. I don't know. And he's totally willing traitor after seeing this. Wow. So maybe we'll see actually Baltar actually turn completely against the humans. You know, maybe assume his role on one of the base stars, like the old Baltar.
Yeah,
you know?
The old Baltar was the little, you know, like the Dr. Smith.
Yeah,
of,
Lucifer. Yeah. So maybe they're heading to that. I mean, I like to see it finally, probably eventually it's going to go there, because on the original series, they got old pretty quick, seeing Baltar swirl around in that chair and all that. So maybe they could, they said, what, in the second 10 episodes, we're going to see... the view from the Cylons, what's going on. So maybe that's how they're going to do it. Baltarization is going to go to a base star and see how they view things. And you know.
Well, it'll be interesting to find out that if Six is is actually a
person,
something stuck in his head,
what
or
actually is
it's
a hologram,
mental problem, or what's going on with him.
Yeah.
Because it's really strange how he said you need to switch off for a little while.
Yeah, he sent her away, which I thought for a while there he couldn't keep, you know, couldn't tell if she's there or she's not half the time. And now in the second season, he's been able to tell her to go away. You know? So, and then he said he cares for her very much and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that's where they're heading. Maybe he's going to get sick of humanity and want to propagate a new humanity with the Cylons. You know, maybe he'll see how the Cylons are probably, you know, in their way, they're right, you know. And the way the humans treat the Cylons. I don't know. I mean, who knows where they're heading. But Baltar had an awesome cape, though. Who's that? Original Baltar. John Calico.
He
had a good cape.
He had a pretty cool cape.
the first episode, a white cape.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like the last Starfighter with the guy with the big scepter.
Yeah. wait a minute. Conan Gruels is saying the attempted rape scene has infuriated some of the original series fans. Oh, my God. They have written a letter to Ron Moore indicating their displeasure with the series, starting with the baby killing and the miniseries up to the rape. Oh, for crying out loud. They even aired a disclaimer prior to that scene. Oh. That... the disclaimer said, due to delicate subject matter, the following, you know, blah, 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 is not for all viewers. So, I mean, they did put a disclaimer about that scene. So, don't worry. Why are these people so upset? The original series fans, if they don't like the show, why are they watching it, for crying out loud? Same thing with me. They bombard me with hate emails, death threats, and everything else because I play the damn music and the Cylons talking and all that BS. So, anyway... I just think I think it's ridiculous. So anyway, I think our guest is on the line.
Yes, our guest is on.
Ah, Leah, are you there?
Hi, I am.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Oh, good. I'm not. Did I interrupt you?
No, you're fine.
Okay,
you're
good.
Fine. No, but we're just rehashing the mid-season, finale there with everybody in the chat room and you know all the listeners out there. So.
Got ya.
Now, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And now, we talked a little bit on the phone earlier. Now, were you able to see the last episode or no?
No, I have not seen it. No, I was only able to see up until Flight of the Phoenix.
Wow. Now, what did you think of that episode? That was an excellent show as well.
You know, it was so exciting. I watched all, I think Flight of the Phoenix was number nine.
Yes.
And I watched all nine episodes in 2 days.
Wow.
I love our show.
That's good. I
hadn't seen it since last year, so.
Really?
It was really exciting to watch them all. It's such a good show.
Yeah. Now, you like your role? I mean, you showed up, what, in the middle of the first season, right?
No, I showed up in the season finale
last year. Cobalt's Last Gleaming. That's right.
It was pretty funny because I almost missed the audition.
Really?
I had another audition right before it, mm-hmm. and that one ran late, and so I thought I was going to miss the audition. And I was about 45 minutes late, I think. And so I figured that everyone had gone home, and I just kind of wandered in just to see if there was anybody left. Mm-hmm. And the casting director had waited around for me. And I felt so bad. I ran down. I said, just give me a second. I just have to run to the washroom. So I ran into the washroom, checked my makeup, turned around, ran out of the bathroom, and ran straight smack into the washroom door.
Oh, no.
And knocked myself out and gave myself a black eye.
Oh, no.
So I did the entire audition with my left eye blinking uncontrollably.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, well, forget about that one. And I booked it. I couldn't believe it. I had to give Michael a Reimer a bad time.
Yeah.
Really? You picked me? Come on. That was awful.
He thought you were flirting with him, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, Reimer, he's an old Star Trek hack, too. So, I mean, he's got a good eye for talent and everything. So, good for him.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. I love working with him. And so I got to come in. I was so lucky because my very first day shooting on Battlestar was the very end scene when Adama gets shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it took us about 15 hours to do that scene.
Wow.
And absolutely everybody was in it. So it was so exciting to be there. I fell in love with the show instantly.
That must have been fun. You know, I know the long days of shooting are kind of like a pain in the ass, but I mean, especially that last scene, that was such a, you were there.
You know what? To be on a show that has a high enough budget that you can actually spend that amount of time shooting something, it's just an absolute joy.
Yeah. I mean, like scenes get cut out. Do you get upset when you see, oh, I'm going to be in all these scenes, all of a sudden you watch the show and you say, oh, I'm only in one scene, what happened? You know?
Are you saying that because that happened?
No, I'm just asking.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to my first convention on Thanksgiving, the Canadian Thanksgiving long weekend.
Oh.
And the guy that's organizing the convention emailed me and asked me what scenes I would like for him to cut together as a little promo trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, in Flight of the Phoenix, I've got this scene where I'm playing poker and then I'm fighting with Starbuck and then this happens and that happens. And he kept emailing me back and going, well, I'm not really sure. And I thought the guy was kind of odd. And then I watched the episode and went, oh, no wonder you were confused. They cut all my scenes out.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, oh well, it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's fun, so much fun shooting them that whether or not it makes it in, that's a whole other story.
Well, it would be nice if they, you know, like in the DVD versions, they put all those scenes in or like extras so you can see, you know, all the work, because there's some excellent scenes. When Aaron Douglas was on, he said he's had some great scenes. He wishes he can, you know, they'd air them, you know?
Yeah, actually. I was a bit disappointed. There's a scene where when Hilo, Starbuck and I are playing poker with Duck, and Hilo walks in and we all exchange some really nasty words about him.
Oh.
And I was a bit disappointed that one got cut out. So it would be cool to see that in a DVD for sure.
Yeah. Now, what was your first role as an actress?
My very first role was on a TV show called The Chris Isaac Show.
Ah.
I don't know if you get it in the States.
Yes, we did.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that was my very, very first role.
Chris Isaac, how was that?
I remember that I was so excited by the little things. I kept calling my mom every 10 minutes to tell her what my trailer looked like and what they were serving at the craft services and what we had for lunch. I was just so excited to be on set, John.
Now,
it was fantastic.
Yeah. Now, do you all get trailers up there in Vancouver? I've never asked Aaron or Katie anything. Do you all have your own trailers up there or what?
Oh, my goodness.
No?
The trailers for Battlestar Galactica are the best that I have ever been on.
Wow.
Gotta send us some pictures.
I could move in and live in them.
Really?
Dark cherry wood.
Wow.
Leather couches. It's got a bar. And not that there's anything in the bar, but if you wanted to set up a bar, you could.
Mm.
Huge flat screen TV. Oh, it's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, we're treated very, very well on Battlestar.
Well, that's cool. And you know, some reason I thought, because, you know, it's sci-fi, it's a cable network, I thought you all being like construction trailers or something like that. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
No. You should see them. They're fantastic.
Really?
They're like top of the line. Yeah.
I should make a
and
trip
course,
up there.
And, of course, Eddie and Mary have got these crazy big huge motorhomes, but the rest of us still, the trailers are fantastic.
Huh.
Yeah, that'd be cool to do like a remote from up there.
I should do a remote
from
up there.
Check out, like, do like a video tour of a couple of the trailers or something.
Now there's an idea.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
And when you guys come back in the second season in January, you should do like a little lowdown show and show some of the trailers and how the life is on the set when they're not shooting.
We should do that.
And we
should.
You guys should come up. That'd be
so
much fun.
Yeah, you got to talk to Aaron Douglas and Katie about bringing me up there. I mean.
Okay, I will.
Road trip.
Now, you're on True Calling. True Calling was an excellent show, too. You played Julie, right?
Yeah, actually, I tested for the lead on that show. I got flown down by the director, Philip Noyce, who, oh, God, the man directed, he's directed every big star in Hollywood, and he wanted me to come down and test for the lead role of True. And I went down to L.A., and it was very exciting because I was still such a new, green little actress and had no idea what was going on. And I guess Eliza Dushku had another show which fell through, and so she already had her contract set up with Fox, and so they gave her that part. So it was kind of my consolation prize. I got to be Julie on the show, which was still really, really fun.
Yeah. Now, did you watch True Calling? And he's like, I could have done better in that role than she did. You know what I'm saying?
No.
No?
No? No. I thought Eliza did really, really well.
Really?
I think it's a difficult part to play because it's not really based in reality. And I think she did a good job. And I like the show. I'm sorry it got canceled.
Yeah.
What happened.
Have you ever tried out for a role and somebody else got it and you look at it and it's like, damn it, I could have done better. Yeah. You know? No.
That's a good question. I don't know.
No. And then you're on Robson Arms. What kind of show is that? I don't remember that at all.
Robson Arms is a Canadian show.
Oh.
It's about an apartment building in Vancouver and all the crazy people that live within it. And it kind of showcases the creme de la creme of Canadian television.
Really?
And my part was a smaller role on it, but it was a really fun show to do, and it got picked up for another season, so I'm hoping they can bring me back as a bigger role.
Well, that'd be cool. Now,
yeah.
Is it like a Melrose Place of Canada or something, or what?
No, not at all. There's
no sex?
No, it's not as sexy as Melrose Place, that's for sure.
But it's like an apartment building, and it's a story of what's going on in each of the units, is that right?
Yeah, Margot Kidder from Superman.
Yeah.
She played Lois Lane. She's married to Smoking Man from The X-Files.
Oh.
And the two of them get showcased as a couple that live within the building. And she plays a kleptomaniac, and he's a real stick in the mud. And they go through all these different problems. And then there's, the two guys that have a marijuana grow up in their apartment. And then down the hall, there's the immigrant family from China, and they run a little store within the apartment. It's more real life, than something like Melrose Place.
Oh, well, that's cool. Yeah, well, it's good. We need more of these true dramas like Battlestar Galactica. Although it's in space and everything, it does reflect regular life. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, and I think that's what's so fantastic about Battlestar, and especially being a sci-fi show, we can really bring up topics that maybe wouldn't be so kosher in a non-sci-fi show, can really, the topics that we get to cover, you just can't do that in normal TV, and it's so exciting.
Yeah, especially on cable, you can get away with a little bit more than you would on network television. Like the Smoking Doctor, that never would have flown on the network.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
There's no way, and it's some of the stuff they get away, because some of those things that Katie had in the first season, sex scenes and sex, that never would have gotten through on the network. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And actually, right now, at the moment, I'm at a big event party for the Vancouver International Film Festival.
Oh.
For the show that I'm on. I'm working on another show, as well as Battlestar, called Godivas. And we're on Bravo Channel. And so I think you guys have Bravo in the States as well.
Oh.
And, talk about doing stuff that you're not allowed to do on TV.
Now, what's that show about?
Godivas?
Yeah, it's not about chocolate, is it?
Pardon me?
You guys sell chocolate in the store or something, or what?
No, not quite. We sell, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Really?
In the restaurant industry.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It's racy and sexy and just really, really wild. I feel so lucky right now. I got the best of all worlds. I've got this great comedy drama that I do, and then my sci-fi show, and I feel like I won the lottery.
No, it's good for you. You're like an embarrassment of riches there. You got two, a show that's hot. Sounds like Godiva is going to be a pretty good show on Bravo as well.
Yeah. We're in our second season now. We got picked up for another 13. So
congratulations.
We're just celebrating that right now.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah.
And I just, can I release this right now? I'm so excited.
Go ahead.
I just found out last Thursday that I'm going to be in a movie with Al Pacino.
Wow.
Called 88 Minutes. I'm shooting in October.
Well, congratulations.
just beside myself. I get to do scenes with Al.
Al Pacino.
Oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. When the director told me I got the part, I went, oh, my God, Al Pacino. And he goes, you're going to be cool, right, Leah? You're going to be cool. I'm like, oh yeah, uh-huh. Sure, I will.
Well, that's outstanding because, you know, he's one of the biggest actors of our time, and, you know, in a movie, 88 minutes, what's your role going to be?
My role, I opened the movie, and I guess, this is so funny, I haven't actually read the script yet. Mm-hmm. They just gave it to me before I came to this party, so it's in my car. It was still hot from the presses, and I haven't read it yet, but my character seduces Al Pacino's character to get a specimen sample from him, I do believe.
What the hell?
Yeah. Say hello to my little friend.
Yeah,
so try and work that one out. I don't know.
I guess. I mean, 88 minutes. I mean, what's the premise of the movie?
I think it's going to be a Silence of the Lambs kind of thing. He's got 88 minutes to solve
a murder,
a huge serial killer crime thing, something. Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I'm not exactly sure because I just got the script.
But CSI does, in 88 minutes, CSI could solve like 8 or 9 crimes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, well, congratulations.
A crime and a half, anyways.
Yeah,
well, yeah, now, thank you so much.
Now, will the shooting interrupt Galactica at all, or how are you going to work the shooting of that movie?
Well, yeah, this is a thing. It's really quite complicated how it all works out. I think because of Godiva's, Battlestar's had to cut back on racetrack a little bit. But the 88 minutes, I'm only in it. It shoots on the weekends, so I only think I'm unavailable for 3 or 4 regular days of shooting. So hopefully it'll all be worked out.
Huh. No.
But that's my agent's job. I don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, they should work around. Will they work around the schedules of all the shows? I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing how well all the shows get along and how everybody works it out. And because Battlestar Galactica is such a huge show that we've got 2 units. So we've usually got 2 different separate units shooting most days.
Yeah.
So they're very flexible in working around people just because they have 2 full units going all the time.
Yeah.
Almost all the time.
Huh, now is 88 minutes going to be shot up in Vancouver as well, or?
Yeah, it's going to be shot here.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's all right there. Exactly. Yeah, so you got Godiva's and you got Galactica and you got 88 minutes right there. So you're going to be busy.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, and then now I got a question from the chat room. Now, have you come up with a backstory for your character with racetrack?
Really? Definitely. I mean, as an actor, it's your responsibility to come up with it. And then if the more information that I get, if it doesn't work with my backstory, then, you know, that's fine. You just change it as it goes. But I definitely have a little story that I've got.
Really? You imagine, like, her family's all dead on the colonies or, you know, or they're in the fleet somewhere?
Yeah, no, I think Racetrack's family is completely gone.
Mm.
And I really love that she recently got a name. Her Margaret Edmondson is her name.
Yes.
And they came up with that, I think, a couple of episodes ago. And my backstory to that, my own grandmother's name is Margaret.
Oh.
And so I took it that Racetrack's grandmother's name was also Margaret. And so she kind of feels like that's her connection to her family. And she was quite close to her grandmother. And her grandmother died in the Holocaust. And she's, you know, carrying on the name and trying to fight the good fight and somehow etch out a life on the ship.
Yeah, and then also I know in that episode with Hilo when he came back to the ship, you kind of gave him a hard time and all that. I mean, that was kind of cool. Usually some of these shows, things wrap up in a single episode. It's good that Galactica keeps some of the stories kind of stringing along, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm really, really interested to see what happens with that, actually. Because, you know, based on when Racetrack was with Boomer blowing up the Base Star, she was really terrified when that whole thing went on, and Michael Reimer and I worked out that she was kind of a newbie, a new Raptor pilot, and that this, because so many other pilots had died, that this was a mission that she shouldn't really have gone on, and she was quite the rookie. And so I took her to be kind of naive and just excited to be where she was, and then all of a sudden she's dissing Hilo and causing ways with him, and they actually cut out a scene of mine where I really went after Hilo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gotta get those DVDs.
And I'm a little bit relieved because I felt like she was a little bit more naive than that. And I guess the point that they were getting across was that everyone was at their wit's end by Flight of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
That we were all ready to snap. And so, you know, Racetrack was even lashing out at poor Hilo.
Yeah.
But I think that that's not really her sentiments. I think that she's really torn. I think she because Boomer obviously was a friend of hers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If we flew together and to blow up the base like that, that was pretty exciting, you know, must have felt some kind of camaraderie.
Yeah.
So...
Well, that was an outstanding scene, too, where you're kind of looking around. She walks out, you know, they blow up the base star, and she comes out with her helmet off. You're like, what the hell are you doing? Your helmet's off. You know, that was a good scene.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that there's got to be some connection between her and Boomer. So for her to be so mean towards Hilo, I think, I don't know that that's her true feelings. And I'd kind of like to see something grow between Hilo and Racetrack.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah.
Really?
I don't know. I think there could be something there.
Wow, like a love triangle?
Just I don't know.
Wouldn't Boomer have to, like, die or the new Sharon with the baby? Something would have to happen with that because he's already killed for her now, so.
I don't know.
This is true. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Would you like to be like Grace Park? You got all these roles. I mean, that woman can never die in the show because there's always bring out another version of her. I mean, it's got to be incredible, huh?
What's that?
Well, she had two versions of her going at the same time. You know, and it's would you like to have that happen to you as well?
When I was watching the episodes last week, she just Grace amazes me. I'm from an acting point of view to play two completely different characters like that, and to always because you know you don't shoot in sequence, so to always know which character you're playing and where that character is at, it's hard enough with one.
Yeah.
To do that with two, I'm so proud of her. Grace and I were friends before, you know, Battlestar existed, and I'm just so excited for her and so proud of her. And you know, it would be exciting. It would also be really challenging.
Mm. Actually, the chamber wants to see a cat fight between you and Boomer in the second 10 episodes. What do you think?
Who wants to see a cat fight?
Somebody in the chat room wants to see a cat fight between you and Boomer.
Me and Boomer over Hilo?
Yeah.
I say go for it. One of my absolutely favorite things to do is kick butt. I have a little bit of a martial arts background, and
really?
I would love Racetrack to kick some ass. Yeah,
we would need to see more of that going on. And like with the scene with Hilo, you kind of turn into like a hard ass on the show. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
And then at the end, you kind of break and shake his hand for thinking of putting the whatever the hell it was on the ship, the polymer or where it was.
Yeah.
So I mean,
carbon composite. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have it because you know you got Starbuck, she's a rule breaker. Boomer, you know, she's a Cylon. You need somebody that's gonna be like more of a military, you know, like brat on the show. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? If they took Racetrack that way, I would love it.
Yeah.
And I would love to be a martial arts specialist. I mean, I did a movie called Thralls where I was played a vampire, and
really?
The vampires could really kick butt. And we had stunt people come in, and they ended up sending mine home, and I did all my own stunts. I just love it.
Hmm. Now,
I love fighting.
Now, a question from the chat room. Can you see this role lasting for years on the series?
Can I see it lasting for years?
Yeah.
I hope it lasts for years.
Yeah.
Does that count? I would love for her to be around forever.
Yeah, I mean, they're a strong woman right now. Starbuck's the only strong woman. It's a you know
yeah,
pilot.
Yeah, she's more of like a rebel. They
yeah.
need a. There's
rule.
There's not one woman on there that's really like militaristic.
Exactly.
All the rest of them are kind of wishy washy.
Well, I guess. Well, what about Kat? Kat's a bit of a fireball too.
Yeah, yeah. She kind of melted down though, didn't she? Wasn't she using?
Yeah, good point. She had a bit of a meltdown, but I think she's that. She's got that Latin fire in her. So I'd be interested to see what happens between Racetrack and Kat, actually. I don't know how well they get along. I think there'd be a lot of fire between them, too.
Wow. Or they can fight over Hilo or Tyrol or something like that.
What's up with all this fighting here, Sean?
I want Hilo, damn it. I'll take Boomer on.
No, I heard a rumor. Now, what about somebody suggested you should be the love interest for Apollo?
Yeah, you know what? I heard that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, I don't know, I see sparks flying between Apollo and Duala.
Oh, really?
And I think that's, you know, sexy Candace and sexy Jamie, I don't know. I think that that's a pretty good pair-up right
wow.
there.
And then,
not that I would complain if they put Racetrack in there, but, you know, I kind of see them going that way. And, I, you know, I'd be happy with that. I'd be happy for the two of them.
Now,
I think that's a sexy pair.
Yeah. Now, have you had any weird fan encounters besides this program?
No, you know what? I was wondering if you were going to ask me something like that because I have a funny story about that.
Uh-oh.
I think that if any of... any fans of the show, if you would walk right by me on the street and never know that I play Racetrack.
Hmm.
I was working with Richard Hatch, and we were we did a scene. I wasn't in the scene with him. I was watching him do a scene, and we were talking between takes, and we were having a good time, having a good conversation. The next week, I came in dressed like Leah at the script read, and he introduced himself to me, and I said, oh, we've already met. I play Racetrack. And he just looked at me blankly. He had no idea who I was. So then the following week, we were in a scene together, and I came dressed in my jeans and my Battlestar shirts, and he was making fun of my costume. But we were just blocking the scene. You know, we weren't ready to shoot it yet.
Yeah.
So we were chit-chatting, and then we go to hair and makeup, and they do my hair. They put it in a ponytail. They take off my makeup, and they put me in Battlestar makeup. Richard comes in and introduces himself to me.
Again?
And I'm like, is this guy serious? I just talked to him 5 minutes ago. And he looks at me and he's like, oh, you don't know who I am. You don't recognize me. That's okay if you don't remember me. That's fine. I'm Richard. We met last week. And I went, yeah, I know exactly who you are. I'm Leah. We just met 5 minutes ago. And he had no idea. As soon as I put my hair and do the Battlestar makeup, nobody knows who I am.
No, I think this is...
I haven't had any fan things at all. And I've only ever had 2 fan letters in my life.
Really?
So if anyone wants to write to me, I'd be so excited.
Oh,
I'll write you back.
Where do they write fan mail to? Sci-Fi Universal or what?
People have been... The two that I got went to my agent, Kirk Talent, in Vancouver.
Really?
And I wrote them back the same day. I was so excited.
Well, they should. I mean, the actors should get feedback. You know, not perverted crap, but, you know, just, you know, you're doing a good job, yada, yada. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? It just makes your day.
Yeah.
I really, really appreciate it. And I've been on set when all the, you know, Aaron and Katie and everybody gets their fan mail. And, you know, we all talk about it. It's really exciting for us.
Yeah.
One of Katie's fans made her a CD, and she was playing it for everybody.
Wow.
And, you know, like, it means a lot to us. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're all doing, you know, you guys are, you know, it's stressful shooting the series and all that. It's good to hear from the fans.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
I love it.
Especially you're going to the convention. I mean, you know, those. I've been a couple of those things. Boy, you're in for, ever been to one of those?
I've never, no. And my cousin is a huge sci-fi fan, and he's actually on the board of directors, so he's organizing it, and that's how I'm going. And I'm a little bit nervous. I hope that I want to be on the ball.
Oh, you better
know all your scenes.
All of your scenes and think of something you were thinking of every single time.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm like, what were you thinking when you looked over toward da 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 da?
Yeah, you're gonna get that. Oh, what were you thinking when you're snapping at Hilo? I mean, what were you thinking? You know, I mean,
it's so funny.
Yeah.
Usually you're thinking like with all my scenes, our helmets are really big and cumbersome. We actually got new ones, which fit so much better. But whenever I'm flying the Raptor, all I'm ever thinking is, try to look like you can actually see. Try and look like you can actually see, because I can't see a damn thing. Because you know, helmet's always right in front of my face, and I just look like a big Q-tip.
Yeah, well, you know, I had Bodhi Olmos on about 6 months ago, and he said the scenes, you know, the Viper scenes are the worst ones, because you don't know what you're reacting to, that the thing's real tight. I mean, the Raptor's a little different, but, I mean, still, is it the same premise? You don't know what you're supposed to be reacting to?
The Raptors?
Yeah.
You know, I love doing the Raptor stuff. The creative directors, they always come in and they give us diagrams and pictures of what we're looking at. For example, when I flew into the Baystar, you know, we're just looking at a green sheet, but the guy came in and he showed us exactly what the Baystar was going to look like. So we can get a visual of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from worrying about if I can, because I literally, my helmet fell down so far in front of my face, I couldn't see anything except the inside of my helmet. But when you watch it, it actually kind of looks like I can see, so that was interesting. But as far as visually, you know, you're not completely in the dark. They do such a good job there of really telling you exactly what's going on, so you can visualize everything and you really know what's happening. And the Raptor, I would not want to fly a Viper As an, I mean, as for my character, I think it would be great. As an actor, it's pretty tough. They're really claustrophobic and so tight and small. But the raptors are big, and they're so real. All the buttons, everything works. Like,
really?
When you're flying it, you're actually flying it.
Huh.
I mean, it's like I was like a kid in a candy shop. I can't think of anything better than flying a raptor.
Yeah, well, I remember that when they did the miniseries, they did the lowdown. They lift the ship up on the rope and everything, and I mean, it may look like it's taking off. And everybody said they love getting that raptor because it's the closest thing to reality in the show that they have.
Yeah.
And then,
it really is.
Yeah.
The only thing that's bad about it is that you're strapped. You have to wear the seatbelt, and the seatbelt is really, 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 really tight. And I'm actually too short to reach any buttons in front of me.
Uh-huh.
So whenever I'm touching things directly in front of me, I'm just screwing around with the air because I'm too short to actually reach the panel. And you're strapped in so tight to the chair, and the helmet's so big that you have to sit with your head way, way out in front of you, and it really kills my back. I broke my back in a car accident when I was 16.
Oh, wow.
So every once in a while, if the scenes go on for too long, I start to suffer.
Huh. Now,
just because of the posture.
Yeah.
But the actual flying itself is fabulous.
Now, I understand it. Why do they belt you into the ship? It's not flying anywhere. Why do they strap you in for
it? It's got to be kind of looking real there, Sean.
Well, I guess because the look of it used to be, I don't know. Actually, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask the fans. Do you guys notice that we're wearing our seatbelts? Can I tell production that we don't have to wear them?
That's why I understand it, because especially in the Raptor, you don't see, the camera's not looking in your lap or anything. Why?
No, it's
even
not a lap belt.
Oh, because the seatbelts come over your shoulder.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but why?
Sean, you should
know
better than that.
No, I don't understand it. Why? I don't know. It's a little weird to me. Why they have...
It's realism,
I guess,
Sean.
It makes it look real. I don't know.
Because you know that there'd be somebody on a board somewhere saying, oh, they don't even have seatbelts. This isn't real.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. They'd be beating
but
up.
But that's the thing, Sean, is that's how, like, Battlestar is just so, it's so
realistic.
Real. They try and make everything as real as possible and as professional as possible. And, you know, we always have military advisors on board, but we know that we're doing, following everything by protocol, and they really try really hard to do that, so... If I have to be strapped into a seatbelt, so be it. But I'm interested, though. If there's fans out there that say they've never noticed, I'm going to talk to somebody because I hate them.
Talk to production, yeah. Because as I said, sci-fi, I thank them for bringing, let me talk to you today. But, I mean, do you have anybody else's email I can talk to about getting onto the program? No? Hello?
Hello?
I was saying, is there any way you can help me get other stars from the show on my program?
You want to get other stars on the program?
Well, I've had, but now they told me now after you, I won't be able to get anybody else on until January.
Oh,
you believe that?
Fun.
Yeah, I don't know why, because that's when the new episodes start, I guess. But
you know what? They might be worried about us spoiling things, and you're not trust us actors to keep our mouths shut.
Oh, well,
I wonder if that's it.
That's understandable, I guess.
So many of the Vancouver actors, we were all good, good, good friends before Battlestar even existed. So. You got to know who's all in the loop with each other, and we can convince each other to do almost anything.
Wow. Well, that's good for y'all. You get some good friends and everything up there. I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, everybody that's been on the program is really, I think every one of you are just great people. You know, you love your roles, you love the show, which is important, and you're all getting along. You don't hear any stories
we get along extremely well.
Yeah, you don't hear any stories of fighting on the set or anything, which is great. I mean, it's got to be a wonderful experience for everybody, huh?
Honestly, I know it sounds so cheesy, but it really is. It's just such a joy to be there.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Campbell and I go way back. Candace McClure and Nikki Klein, Aaron Douglas. Like, we've known each other for years. Grace Park. We've known each other for years and years and years. And just to get a chance to all work together, it's just like playing. You get paid for it. It's great.
Very good. Now, Leah, before we let you go, we want to know if you can can you record a little bumper for the program?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
What's a bumper?
You say your name. I play, I play Racetrack on Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Subject to Discussion.
Subject to Discussion?
Yes, that's the name of the...
Okay,
just, are you recording it?
Yeah.
Okay, you say it anytime you want.
Hi, my name's Leah Cairns. I play Racetrack on Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to... can I do that again?
Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, my name is Leah Cairns. I play Racetrack on Battlestar Galactica, and you are listening to Subject to Discussion.
Very good.
Thank you very
Wonderful.
Much.
Wonderful. Very professional. You got a career. You got a future in this business, I'm telling you.
You're doing better than Sean so far.
Oh, what are you talking about? I do wonderful.
Hey, how did that go today?
What?
the filming on Las Vegas. It did very well.
It did very well.
What?
Okay, first of all, which episode is
it? Oh, I'm not revealing
it. You're
I'm
on
not
TV now.
You're spoiling my... You're spoiling it.
Oh, sorry.
No.
I thought if I was doing a bumper, I wasn't live right now.
No. It went all right.
I'm so sorry.
Don't worry about it.
They didn't even tell me.
No, just a small location scene they did, and I was in that. James Conn.
Oh, Sean, I apologize.
No.
I should have asked you this morning if that wasn't my
Don't worry about it.
So, I just want to see you because I've only known your voice. I haven't seen your face. Which episode?
Well, it's going to be a bumper.
It'll probably
That's a
get
good question.
Cut.
They didn't even tell me. I'm probably going to edit it out of it, the damn thing.
Sean's going to be on the edit room floor.
Like I said this morning, I only had like two lines during the whole thing. So, but
well, are you going to be on IMDb? Can I look it up?
I don't think so. I don't remember signing anything.
You don't qualify, dude. No.
I was down there because, you know, I work at Caesars, and one of the production assistants says, oh, we were shooting, so come on down. You can say, you know, and then a couple lines. I helped them out with something at the hotel. So I didn't even sign anything either. What the hell? I'm going to sue
them.
You're
supposed to get paid for that kind of stuff too, Sean. Jeez.
I did it for because I like the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding. I do it too.
Yeah, I mean.
And then I'd have to go in, pinch Josh DeHamel and call it a day.
Well, I was busy grabbing Vanessa Marcel. No.
Either way.
Yeah, or James Gunn. No, he's old. But anyway, well, Leah, we'll let you go. We're almost out of time.
Oh, so good talking to you guys.
Thank you very much for being on the program.
I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Have a good night. I said, if you need favors from that other group, I can.
Really?
Some poking around. Oh, yeah.
Please let me know.
Don't do anything.
Especially Candace. I'd like to get Candace on, please.
Candace McClure?
Absolutely.
I will get Candace McClure on.
Well, thank you.
Keep in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you. I will. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Leah Cairns, who plays Racetrack on Battlestar Galactica. We appreciate her being on the program. That was an excellent interview. One of the better ones,
awesome,
I should
interview.
Say. Yeah, except for my flub about the seatbelt thing. I got caught up in the car seatbelt thing, so I apologize. I know I get hate email over that, but I'm sorry. I spaced it. I guess, you know, car seatbelt, so I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then next week will be David Kulhisi of the Snap Group. Oh, that's almost calling in, I think. Tell almost to call back in January when I can have him on, damn it. But anyway, and up next is Wild Women Las Vegas. Now, don't forget, next week, the program will be on from 7 p.m. Pacific till 9 p.m. Pacific. We're switching times. And email is subject number 2 discussion at lvrocks.com. What else do we have to do? Friday is Spank Wagon from 6 to 8. Vegas S&M is tomorrow. And good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.